Sean Murphy Show is on the air.
Here's into the end zone, and it is caught for the touchdown. Sammy Watkins, touchdown Buffalo. Touchdown Sammy Watkins.
It's showtime. It's go time. Let's go, baby.
Dominate on three. 1, 2, 3.
Dominate. Let's go.
And he's going to be sacked again. He is dropped again.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
We'll talk a lot about the offensive line tonight on the show. Second-year offensive tackle Chantrell Henderson scheduled to join us at 7:30. We'll talk with one of the Bills' all-time greats, Al B. Miller, at 8:30 tonight. He's going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Tim McDonald, the Bills' new defensive backs coach, joins us at 10 after 8. And we want to hear from you. Is the Bills' O-line all set as they approach the midway point of the offseason workout?
If we're all in it, if we're all in it together, we'll win.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
You know, I think we're beyond the midway point of the OTAs of the offseason workout. I don't know why I said that, but yeah, we're well beyond that. The Bills here at One Bills Drive today finished up week two of organized team activity. Four more days of that coming up next week, and then 3 days of mandatory minicamp, and then about 5 weeks off, they go to training camp at the end of July. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Welcome to One Bills Drive, where it's a nice night in Orchard Park, a nice spring night, and a nice day on the practice field for the Bills. No raindrops under cloudy skies as they had their OTA session today, which went pretty well. As I said, OTA session number 7, and 4 more to go next week. Actually, OTA session number 6 with 4 more to go next week. And we're here to talk about that tonight, here to talk with you. We've kind of touched on the offensive line a couple of times. And I've spent the last 2 days while I've watched OTAs kind of keeping an eye on who's playing with whom up front, who's doing well up front. We're going to hear from offensive line coach Aaron Cromer in a minute or two about these OTA practices and how the Bills have been doing. But as you know, there's been a lot of moving parts up, up there. If you put down on paper, say 3 months ago, your concerns about the Bills for 2015, I would hazard a guess that most of you would have said offensive line would be, what, top two, maybe top three? Quarterback, obviously, everybody concerned about who the quarterback's going to be. But based on last year's struggles and based on the fact that they did not, they signed Richie Incognito but didn't really make big splash free agent offensive line signings, you'd probably be concerned that they would be better on the offensive line. How are you now with that? Where do you think they're all set on the offensive line? My show producer here, Jay Harris, and we were talking today because I know we've talked about the offensive line on the show a lot. But, Jay, we decided last time we kind of raised a similar question was before the draft, before the selection of John Miller, right, when we said, are the Bills all set on the offensive line?
Yeah, we laid out where. How do you see the offensive line at this point? Where do you see them lining up? And this was before the draft, so a lot of people called in and said they were going to draft a tackle or
right.
a guard.
We talked about that, right?
Yeah, and that was, we were talking about their second-round pick.
Yeah.
That it was going to be somewhere on the offensive line. But I think going into these last couple OTAs, I think they have a steal, and we'll hear more from their offensive line coach Aaron Cromer on John Miller. But I think it's shaping up pretty nicely.
I do, too. I think it's we'll see. I mean, again, no pads yet in practice, no games, obviously. I think it's not – I'm not as concerned about the offensive line as I was maybe 3 months ago when I think about this Buffalo Bills team. And I think they may have the answers here in-house. May have, because we don't know. But let's talk about the offensive line. Why we don't know? Or
no, I'm saying why do you –
Why do we may have the answers? Because Miller has been solid.
Yes.
And as you said, we'll hear Aaron Cromer talk about him. We've heard Rex Ryan talk about him. We heard Greg Roman talk about him today. And I've watched him. You know, I've watched John Miller. Yes. He does not look out of place with the starting unit on the offensive line. I love the fact, and I consider our show, Jay, as on the forefront of the renewed interest in Cyrus Kwanjo. And in the microwave world in which we live, and I think that's what LeCharles Bentley said, right? Everybody wanted Cyrus Kwanjo to be a starter last year. It didn't work out. He was not ready and fell out of favor and never got a chance to play. But now he's getting a chance. Now, is he the answer? We'll find out. I think he's going to continue to get a chance as the weeks roll along here. But I love the fact that they are at least taking a long look at Cyrus Kwanjo. And to be honest, I watched him line up across from Mario Williams all day yesterday with Kwanjo at the right tackle spot and Williams across from him when they were ones versus ones, and he did not look out of place. He looks the part.
And I'm glad you touched on that, because the fans don't get a chance until training camp to actually see this team and what's going on. So they kind of live through us and what we're seeing. So I'm glad you brought that up and explained that.
And the other part of the offensive line, I guess the reshuffled offensive line, would be the left tackle, where Cordy Glenn has been. And, you know, I don't know that Cordy Glenn has lost anything yet, but it's been a full week's worth of OTA work this week for Chantrell Henderson at the left tackle spot. Last year's right tackle has been moved over to play a little left tackle this week. And I think that raises a lot of good questions about what this offensive line might look like. I think it's better than I thought it would be. I think there's a long way to go, and certainly the test will not be until they put the pads on and they get to training camp. But for now, how do you feel about the offensive line? Depth? Let's talk about depth. Craig Urbick is back, and he's already been talked about as a solid depth player. Cyril Richardson, who was a starter at the start of last year, he is back, and I think he has a chance to provide some quality depth. And whoever loses out on the tackle job, whether it's Quanjo Henderson or Cordy Glenn even, I think would be real quality depth on the offensive line. So give us your thoughts on that. Where are you now with the Buffalo offensive line? We don't know. None of us know. Haven't seen him in pads yet. Haven't certainly not seen him in a game situation yet. But are you a little? Are you breathing a little more easier about the Buffalo offensive line now than you were maybe a couple of months ago? Let us know what you think. The phone line's open. 803-0550, the number. From outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can reach us via Twitter at John Murphy, and a couple of tweets already coming in on that. Craig Langlois tweets in, our offensive line is terrible and will be the downfall this year. Bad, bad decisions there. It's unfortunate that Chris doesn't call in. I encourage him to, because I'd like to hear what bad decisions he thinks have been made there. I don't know. I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but I think a statement like that merits some discussion. Matt Dermody tweets him, hard to say about the offensive line till the pads come out in training camp. That and preseason will be the true test for Miller, Incognito, Henderson, etc. I agree with that. Justin Westfall tweets, with all the confidence in Miller, I think the tackles are where the concern should be, and if any of the top five go down, top five offensive linemen. He continues, with proper coaching, they should be okay. The guards will help us run up the middle, hoping the pass protection is good as well. Give us your thoughts on the Buffalo offensive line picture, how it looks now when you see what John Miller has done, essentially being plugged into the offensive, the starting unit on the offensive line. When you see what they're doing at tackle, rotating through Chantrell Henderson and Cordy Glenn and Cyrus Quanjo, are you feeling any better about the Buffalo offensive line? 803-0550 is the number, toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, or you can reach us via Twitter. Going to talk with a couple of offensive linemen tonight. Chantrell Henderson will join us at the bottom of this hour. We'll get his take on that rotation he's involved in now. 8:30 tonight, Al Beemiller, one of the Bills' all-time great offensive linemen, the center on the AFL championship teams. Al Beemiller has just been elected to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. He'll be enshrined this fall, and he'll be joining us live at 8:30 tonight. Let's take a couple of calls. Colin calling from Toronto. Your thoughts on this offensive line issue, Colin?
Thank you for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great.
Their offensive line, you know what? I like the depth that they have. Incognito is a decent addition, whether or not he can keep the locker room happy. My real question, concern, that offensive line can't be much worse than it has been in the last couple of years. My concerns, as I'm sure everybody is, who's the guy going to be the signal caller? Who's going to be our quarterback coming out of OTAs? Obviously, everybody's getting a chance. The guy I'd like to see get the most chance is Tyrod Taylor. I want to hear your thoughts. What are the chances? Great. Looking forward to a great year. Good coach. Strong defense. Solid game plan with an addition of a stellar superstar running back. Can't wait. Can't wait.
Thanks, Colin. Thanks for calling. The quarterback question is front and center. I do believe, and Rex Ryan said it on our show last week, they're not coming out of OTAs next week and not coming out of the mini camp in 2 weeks with a definitive answer at the quarterback spot. Rex Ryan told us a couple weeks ago it'll probably go 2 or 3 weeks into training camp, maybe a couple of games into training camp before they officially anoint the starter. If you're asking me now who they're leaning towards, I would say incomplete. Don't know, because I've watched the rotation at quarterback, and I've watched all three of them work. And for me to say that anyone has an edge, if certainly they're splitting the reps, I'm sure, almost equally between those three. I don't know that any one of the top three have distinguished themselves yet as the guy. You're a Tyrod Taylor fan. Okay, maybe he winds up. He's going to get a chance. He's certainly going to get a chance. And he comes in with, you know, the head coach already in his corner. The head coach has mentioned several times how he tried to trade for him when he was with the Jets. So Tyrod Taylor's getting a fair shake, and I think he's probably happy about that, as most of his fans are. Call here from Nico in Orchard Park. Nico, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, my question wasn't about the offensive line, but I'll comment on it. I believe the offensive line is going to be average, you know, maybe a little above average. You know, they have something to prove, especially with Richie Incognito. So I think that's worth merit. But my two major points were, I know this was rumored at the beginning of the season, but is there any chance that the Bills are going to cut Fred Jackson? One. And two, my next point would be, if we're going to be such a ground-and-pound team, wouldn't their best bet be to go with Tyrod Taylor and give that option of always, you know, having him run the ball? It's just another person that the defense has to account for. I think that would work perfect with our scheme. So I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say. Thanks.
Okay, Nico, thanks. As far as Fred Jackson, yeah, there's a chance. There sure is. They are stacked at running back. There's talent at running back. And there's no question that LeSean McCoy is going to be number one on the depth chart and, you know, take a lot of carries. He's going to suck up all the oxygen in that running back room. I think that's pretty clear. Behind him, you got Fred Jackson. You got Booby Dixon. You got Bryce Brown. You have, you know, the rookie Carlos Williams. Then you got a couple of fullbacks. They're all not going to make it. That whole group, there's going to be some attrition there. I think it's I don't think it's likely that Fred Jackson would be released, but I would think there's certainly a chance if, you know, if somebody steps up during the training camp period, or if you know, if Fred doesn't appear to be, and he looks fine here in these workouts here, but if it appears that he's lost a little bit too much, then yeah, there's a chance. I hope it doesn't happen, but sure, there's a chance. Let's go to Al in Buffalo. Welcome, Al. You're on the show.
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
I just had a quick question. I was reading the paper today, and it kind of sounded like they were making Glenn a second stringer. I was wondering if you knew anything more about that.
Well, no. I mean, I don't think that's accurate. And I watched the OTAs as much as virtually anybody, certainly more than the, you know, outside media. But that's a rotation. Will he wind up on the second string? He could. Cordy Glenn could, but it is, I think, a pretty solid rotation going on right now at the tackle spot. They're giving Henderson a long look at the right side and giving Cyrus Kwanjo a long look at the left tackle spot. So I think they're trying to work through the rotation. Cordy Glenn has a lot to offer. He's done it for his first 3 years in the league now, but they're going to take a look at some other guys as well. But I don't know that he's second string. He could wind up there, but right now I think they're it's pretty equal as far as the reps that those three are going to get with the ones. Mark in Rochester. Mark, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that we're all going to see a vast improvement in the offensive line just because, you know, what Aaron Cromer, his track record, what he brings to the table. I think that kind of is going under the radar. You just look what he did with Chicago. I mean, when he came in, their offensive line was kind of in the same boat that we're in right now. And he was able to turn that around. And I just want to hear, I know you touched about it in previous shows, and
yeah.
I just want to kind of piggyback off that. And I think that that's going to be a tremendous asset to the team this year.
Yeah, I do too. Mark, thanks for calling. I have mentioned that. I think I mentioned it just the other day. Nobody talks about the addition of Aaron Cromer and what he'll do for that position group. I see evidence of that position group improving already. As we said, they're working a rookie in at one of the guard spots. They're rotating three young players, a couple of second-year players, and Cordy Glenn, going into his fourth year, they're rotating them through the tackle spots. And coaching is going to be very critical for that offensive line group. And I think they've got the right man in the spot right now in Aaron Cromer. I think they regressed. You know, a couple of calls ago mentioned how the offensive line's been bad for years. Not really. I mean, it was just the last couple of years, and especially last year when they really dropped down. I think if you go back to when Joe D'Alessandro was the offensive line coach here with much of the same personnel, I mean, he had Cordy Glenn, he had Eric Wood, he had some other pieces in place there, but certainly no Pro Bowl caliber players. I think that offensive line was pretty effective under Joe D'Alessandro. That was when Chan Gailey was the head coach. And then the last 2 years, I think, because of bad technique coaching, I think they've dropped off to the point where they're not real good and weren't real good last year. That's on the rebound now, I believe, with Aaron Cromer and the influx of the draft picks. You know, three of them last year on the offensive line, one of them this year, who looks like he's going to be a starter. Aaron Cromer talked with the media today, talked about how much his offensive linemen can get out of these no-pad practices and organized team activity.
In this setting, what you're trying to do is get them to understand the technique you're trying to use. And so it's not full go, but it does allow them to learn their footwork and learn their hand placement, learn what they're trying to get done when the pads come on. And the more repetition you get without pads, the easier it is to get it down before you start trying to push someone around.
Does the competition almost not start for those spots until the pads come on because it's so hard to evaluate?
I think this is going to be a teaching process through this whole offseason. We get to training camp, it's going to be a teaching process because now we'll have pads, and then as we get closer to the season, we'll have a better feel for who we think we can count on to be the starting five and be the best.
That's one of the common themes you hear from this coaching staff during this organized team activity period here in May and June, the process, you know, and they are fairly early in the process of determining who's going to be the quarterback, who's going to be the starting five on the offensive line, who's going to be the safety alongside Aaron Williams on the back end. It's a process. Among the many things I like about this coaching staff is the experience they bring to the table and the fact that they know exactly in the offseason where they are and when decisions like these have to be made. And, you know, they know the clock is ticking, but they also know that this is the time to experiment. This is the time to teach technique, as Aaron Cromer just talked about. This is the time to see what you have, whether it's offensive line or quarterback. They know they have a pretty good one in John Miller, third-round draft pick from Louisville. You heard Rex Ryan rave about him the other day when he was on our show, I want to say about 3 or 4 weeks ago. You heard Greg Roman, the offensive line coach, rave about John Miller. And today, Aaron Cromer, his position coach, talked about John Miller and his progress so far.
John has adapted to our offense well. He was well coached in college. And when he got here, he was further along than some guys. And he's an extremely intelligent football player. He understands why we're trying to do things, and that really helps him be more productive. We have, with Eric Wood being the same kind of guy, you know, those two guys next to each other can really communicate. Just happens to be they're both from Louisville, but different years, but both smart players, and then Richie Incognito has a lot of experience as well. So, you know, right now with those guys playing together, you know, it's given us a good ability of football knowledge inside.
And Richie, who had been, I think, more right guard, or at least thought to be at that position, is now spending most of his time on the left. Just, is it, he's a veteran, he can adapt to both sides, and Miller, more specifically, a right guard, how's that work out in the decision-making?
Well, as we get going, you know, we'll make a final decision, but as we start and as we are going through these OTAs, learning the offense, I think that's what was best for us. Working next to other guys and trying to get a good combination of five guys on the field.
Okay, that's Aaron Cromer. I want to get one more soundbite up here from Aaron Cromer as we talk about the offensive line. And you're willing to join us. The phone line's open, 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Or if you want to reach out on Twitter, it is at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets. Orlando Weesey tweets in, I think it's incredibly understated how much the previous coaching staff hurt the offensive line. Should be much better now. I think there's a lot of truth in that. And Mitch tweets in, what about Mike Williams on the O-line? Is he still a viable option? I think he means Chris Williams. Chris Williams has not been around. Rex Ryan was asked that question yesterday and said he has not met Chris Williams, has not talked to him, which indicates that you wonder how much, you know, he doesn't have to be here yet. Obviously, it's voluntary. Whether he shows up at the mandatory mini camp in a couple of weeks, I think maybe some of those questions will be answered. Right now, Chris Williams, last year's free agent signing, is not in the mix. One guy who is – here's a guy to watch. I mean, again, what are we talking about? OTAs and minicamp coming up in a couple of weeks. But to my mind, Cyrus Kwanjo is a guy to keep an eye on these next 2 weeks. Not that he's going to get pads on, not that he's going to make a big move. But if he continues to get first-team reps, this is my opinion, if he continues to get first-team reps these next 2 weeks, that would indicate to me that he's doing okay. I can't tell, quite frankly, you know, where he is Cyrus Kwanjo and whether he has enough. There were doubts about him coming in. Sometimes when you talk with Rex Ryan or listen to what they say about Kwanjo, you know, the fact that he didn't play last year, they'd have no tape on him. They know there was an issue with Kwanjo last year when it came to being ready to play and sort of functional strength at the start of a training camp a year ago. And it wasn't all on the coaching staff. Some of it was Kwanjo. And obviously he did not get a chance to develop much at all last year. But he's a guy to watch the next 2 weeks because if he remains in the rotation with the starters at either one of the tackle spots, left side where he's been this past week or maybe getting reps at right side, I think that's an indication that things are going pretty well for him. Aaron Cromer, the offensive line coach, was asked about Kwanjo today. And while they don't overwhelm you with praise for Kwanjo, they don't rule him out either. I think they're very much in a wait-and-see approach with Cyrus Kwanjo. See what you think. Here's what his position coach, Aaron Cromer, said about Kwanjo.
It's hard to gauge because I don't have a background on Kwanjo, but I do understand that he did not play last year. And he's been working really hard at learning the techniques and learning the plays, and when we get pads on, that's when really things are going to show up for the line. It's so hard in the off season because we can find out how to step and how to put our hands and what to do, but we can't really find out the full gamut of technique without pads on.
It just sounds, when you listen to Aaron Cromer and even Rex Ryan the other day asked about Kwanjo, there's a reservation to pump up the guy. Greg Roman was asked about him today, and he said that Kwanjo does things the way they want him done. I'll read you the quote from Greg Roman today on Kwanjo. He keeps making small inch-by-inch strides in that department. That's not what they say about John Miller, is it? They rave and they're effusive in their praise for John Miller. For Kwanjo, he keeps making inch-by-inch strides in that department. Each day, this is Roman talking, every day a guy either gets better or gets worse. Most days for him have been arrow up days. But again, they're going to just keep an eye on that moving towards training camp. I'm talking to myself here because I will keep an eye on it. But if you're watching this closely, watching how this offensive line goes, keep an eye on Cyrus Kwanjo and how many reps he gets with the first teamers. He could go a long way towards solving some of their offensive line issues if he's ready to play. And I'm not guaranteeing that he will be ready to play. But if he continues to get first team reps, Cyrus Kwanjo is a guy to watch. And I think that if he is going to get first team reps moving into the season, then obviously the offensive line shuffle will be on for real, as they say. Jay, do you have anything to add about Kwanjo? And I don't think it's a lock that Kwanjo is in the starting lineup. I don't think it's a lock that Kwanjo is on the roster. But, you know, he just came through a week here of getting first-team reps at left tackle. That's significant to me.
And enough is significant because he wasn't on the field all last year. So
right.
I think that's great to see. And it'll play out, but I think from the outside, he's doing all the right things. We've talked to LeCharles Bentley. We've talked to the coaches around here. He's doing all that he can do right now, and it'll be an interesting training camp, not just with him, but for everybody, but especially for him.
And if Kwanjo does not step up and with the pads on, as Roman and Cromer have said, and if you know they don't like what they see, it'd be very easy for this coaching staff to walk away from Cyrus Kwanjo. They didn't draft him.
They didn't exactly.
You know?
They didn't draft him. There's no attachment there.
So it's interesting to me that he gets as many reps as he does after not playing at all last year, and it's going to be real interesting the next 2 weeks to see if that continues. If you're into this, like we are deep into this. Maybe we're too deep, Jay. Maybe we should just talk about
offensive line.
Maybe we just talk about quarterbacks. Open up the phones.
That's our crutch.
Hey, one other Bills note today, and you knew this already. You probably heard Russ Brandon talk about it last week, and the Browns have already let the cat out of the bag, but it's official now. The Bills and Browns will hold joint practice sessions at training camp a couple of days in August. It's Monday, August 17th, the 10 a.m. practice at St. John Fisher. Tuesday, August 18th, the 6 p.m. practice at St. John Fisher. And then the Bills play a preseason game in Cleveland on Thursday. So it looks like the Browns will be in Monday, August 17th. Tuesday, August 18th, they'll probably scoot out of that out of Fisher after that nighttime practice Tuesday. Bills will probably walk through something in the morning that Wednesday, and then they play the Browns on Thursday, August 20th. So get ready to watch the Browns and the Bills in practice, those of you who make it out to a training camp. Tickets to the joint practice sessions will be free. but will be required. Details regarding ticket distribution coming up a little bit later on. The Bills go to training camp July 31st, and it's 2 days of joint practices with the Cleveland Browns coming up on August 17th and August 18th, Monday and Tuesday. We're going to continue the offensive line discussion when we return with a guy who's very much in the mix as one of the starting tackles for the Bills. He started 16 games at right tackle for the Bills last season. Chantrell Henderson scheduled to join us next. Stick around for that. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh.
Groundhog Day here at One Bills Drive. Here we are at 7:30 again, trying to make contact with Chantrell Henderson. We'll continue to effort, and we'll see where that goes. Chantrell Henderson, as we talk about offensive linemen tonight on the show, just like we were last night. Coming up 8:10 tonight, we'll talk with Tim McDonald, the Bills' new defensive backs coach. He works alongside Donnie Henderson as co-defensive backs coach. And Al Beemiller joins us at 8:30, the longtime Bills center who is going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Al Beemiller, looking forward to talking with him coming up at 8:30 tonight. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Among the others, the coaches who talked today to the media, Sanjay Lal, wide receivers coach, another one who came up from the Jets to work with Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills. Sammy Watkins has missed most of these offseason workouts, the team sessions. He does his own individual work, but he's missed most of the offseason teamwork so far because of his offseason surgical procedure. Sanjay Lal was asked if Watkins has been set back by missing the practice time this spring.
Like you said, he's keeping up. Mentally, he's keeping up. He's coming and meeting. Anytime there's a special teams meeting, he meets extra with me because he's not in special teams, and that is legal to do so. So if anyone's reading this. But off to the side in practice, he's working on all his techniques. So when it comes time to running everything at full speed, he'll understand the technique. When he goes away for the summer, he'll know what to work on. He can work on it the right way and then come back ready.
Yeah, he mentioned that he's learned stuff from you that he hadn't heard before. Percy has said the same thing. How much room do you think Sammy has to grow as a route runner, even though, I mean, he almost had 1,000 yards last year?
Yeah, I don't think you can quantify a receiver's worth by yards. That's system-based, or I've seen teams that are playing from behind the whole year, so there's a lot of yards. But he has a lot of room to grow, but he can be, in my opinion, one of the best route runners because physically there's not really anything Sammy Watkins can't do.
Do you remember the first time you evaluated him, whether it was in college or
yeah,
when you got here?
I was coaching at the Raiders. I had Jacoby Ford on our team at the time, and I texted Jacoby. I said, "You're not the best receiver that's come out of Clemson." That was when Sammy was a freshman, so I watched some of the stuff he was doing, just watching a game casually. Right then you knew his freshman year he was going to be special.
He said that he feels as a group the route running is better already. Yeah, not to compare last year to this year, but he just feels that everybody's taken a step forward in terms of their route running. Can you just maybe outline the messaging that you're giving these guys on the importance of being in the same place every time and how that benefits the quarterback?
Yeah, we look at it. route running is like an art form, a lost art in this league. And we liken it to if you were trying out for Dancing with the Stars, those guys work 4, 5, 8 hours a day on footwork. Well, we're no different. We're choreographers, we're dancers, whatever you want to call it, but there's a choreography to route running. So if your foot is off 6 inches, well, you can't come out of the break as cleanly and as efficiently as you normally would. So we'll film every route from ground level, from behind, from the side, whatever's appropriate, and break it down in slow motion. Where are their feet hitting? Where is their chin at the break point? You know, are their eyes coming back early enough or too late? So we'll break down every route to minutia and get it right so they understand what they're doing, and then just keep working it and trying to get it in muscle memory.
And cutting it that fine, do you think these guys have developed a greater appreciation for it?
I think they developed appreciation that when you tell them something, hey, move your foot out 6 inches on the break point, and it brings them out of a cut really efficiently, a light goes off and says, oh, wow, it is all about geometry, physics, center of gravity, all of that. And they get a new awareness of maybe the science behind it. So there is good appreciation. When we're showing those clips in slow motion, it could be tedious, but everyone's involved in really buying into, hey, this is going to make me a better route runner.
That is Sanjay Lal, the Bills wide receivers coach, talking about Sammy Watkins and some of the young wide receivers he's had. The Bills, of course, have wrapped up another week of OTAs this week. The players off until next Monday when they have 4 days. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a guy who's got a lot of work over the last few weeks, offensive lineman Chantrell Henderson in his second year as a draft pick for the Bills a year ago, seventh rounder out of Miami. Chantrell, thanks very much for being on the air with us for a couple of minutes. We appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, man.
How does it feel to be 2 weeks into OTAs, knowing that you've got about 2 weeks left in this off-season workout regimen? What do you think so far?
Oh, man, it feels good, man, just to be back. You know what I'm saying? Got a lot of new teammates. Meeting a lot of different people, man. Just, getting the crowd down packed again, man. So I'm just happy to be back working.
Chantrell, I'm curious, and we talked about it before you came on board here tonight about the shuffle of tackles on the offensive line. You got most of your work, it seemed to me, this week on the left side, right, at the left tackle spot. How did that go for you?
Oh, man, it's been I'm trying to get it down pat, man. You know, usually a little more comfortable on the right, but, you know, it's good to be versatile, so I'm just, getting my technique down pat as far as becoming back comfortable on left side.
What is it about the right side that makes you feel more comfortable?
I think just the fact that that's what I played, you know, all the way through college and all the way up until now. And I did play a little bit of left tackle last preseason, so that was a little different for me too. But I like both sides, so it's fine with me.
What's the biggest difference, right side to left side, Chantrell?
I think it's just, you know, I think honestly it's just repetition. I just feel more comfortable, you know, kicking my right leg, just as far as me personally.
We played a soundbite with Aaron Cromer. In fact, I think we can play it. Aaron Cromer was asked about you, the offensive line coach today, Chantrell, and he talked about how he wants to get you and the others, really, all up to speed on both sides of the ball. Here's what Aaron Cromer had to say about that.
We're moving a lot of guys, and he's one of them. He has to play right and left, and so do some other guys. And so we feel like when you get in a game, it's important that you have backups and starters that can move. And if you train them in more than one spot, you have a much better situation with when you only dress seven linemen. And that's what we're trying to do with him, and that's what we're doing with a lot of guys. And I think that'll bode well in the end. Right now it's hard on guys to do them both. But that's the National Football League. You have to be able to play both sides.
That's Aaron Cromer talking about that shuffle of the tackles up front. Chantrell, what's your thought on this? Do you think eventually they're going to wind up putting you back on the right side, or do you have any idea where this might go?
Oh, man, right now it's just OTAs, man. So I know once camp comes and, things will probably start changing a little bit when camp starts, you know what I'm saying? So. But as far as right now, man, I'm actually glad that, you know, we're doing this so I can feel comfortable on both sides, you know, once preseason starts and things like that.
Chantrell Henderson on the line with us. Chantrell, last year, seventh round pick, the third of three offensive linemen chosen by the Bills in the draft. And you're the one who wound up starting all 16 games last year. Did it surprise you how much playing time you got last year?
Yeah, it did, man. Coming in and just starting last year when I got here in May, it was just kind of, you know, everything was different, you know, getting to learn the playbook and things like that. I actually didn't have as much confidence, you know, just because I didn't have the whole playbook down tight yet. But once I started getting it down, man, seeing that, you know, I could actually do this and having a little bit more confidence in myself, the game started becoming easier for me.
What was easy for you, and what did you find that was not as easy as you kind of break down your game? I mean, were you better at run blocking as opposed to pass protection as you look back on it?
I think I can say so. I think I'm good at, you know, getting that first initial step off and getting my hands on the guy as far as pass blocking. You know, I think my footwork put me in a lot better just as far as kicking and kicking on certain angles and things like that. But for the most part, I think I had a good year. is working to get better right now.
Hey, Chantrell, I mean, most of our listeners know your story coming out of high school in Minnesota as one of the highly, probably the most highly recruited prospect the year he came out of high school, and then to last until the seventh round in the draft last year. Did you feel like you played last year with like a chip on your shoulder, like you had something to prove?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I had to. From getting drafted and on to now, you know, I had to prove myself. You know, I had a couple practices I made in college that kind of put me where I was at in the draft, and I just wanted to come up there and, you know, bounce back.
Last thing, Chantrell, how do you like this new coaching staff? Both Coach Cromer, Coach Greg Roman, the coordinator, and even the head coach Rex Ryan. What do you think of this group?
Oh man, I love all three of them, man. Everybody's real down to earth, and you know. Trying to help us learn and teaching us all the techniques we need to know to win. So I'm having a good time. And, you know, all three coaches, man, they're real cool. I like it.
Chantrell, we thank you for coming on the air with us tonight. We'll see you around here next week. Thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay, Chantrell Henderson, Bill's seventh rounder from a year ago, offensive lineman from the University of Miami, started every single game on the offensive line last year at right tackle, but part of that tackle rotation the Bills have going on here in OTAs. Chantrell joined us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Back in a moment, more to come. You can weigh in on the Buffalo offensive line, how you think it might shake out, and are they further ahead on the offensive line than you thought they might be at this point? 803-0550, the number to call with your comments or questions. Outside Buffalo, toll-free call, 1-888-552-550. Back with more in a moment from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Chantrell Henderson for joining us on the show as we talk about offensive linemen, the Bills' offensive line. How are you feeling about it now compared to where you were maybe before the draft? They did not go for an offensive lineman with their first pick in the draft, as many thought they would. I kind of thought they might. They did not do that. Instead, they obviously chose Ronald Darby, but got a pretty good one in the third round, John Miller. And now, as you watch them, as we watch them in these OTAs, offensive line, the tackle situation is a little bit cloudy, but Henderson, our guest just a moment ago, is in the mix, one of the three candidates for the two starting spots. Cyrus Quanjo is in the mix as a candidate for a starting spot. He's worked all this past week as the starting left tackle. And Cordy Glenn, who's been the starting left tackle for the last 3 years, appears to be in the mix as well for the starting spot. Give us your thoughts on that. Are you feeling better about what the Bills have up front at the guard spots with Incognito and Miller and, of course, Eric Wood at center? 803-0550, the number to call from in Buffalo, outside Buffalo, toll-free call at 1-888-552-550. You can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A tweet from Wayne Solomon who says, I believe the coaching staff is cautiously optimistic about Cyrus Quanjo. I believe, he says, they like him a lot. Yeah, well, you know, you've heard some of the comments they've made about Quanjo. I think they are open-minded. I mean, Quanjo is a physical specimen. There's no question about that. Cyrus Quanjo looks the part. He is huge. He is athletic. He is long. He's got all the attributes physically you'd look for from an offensive lineman. Now, last year there were concerns about his functional strength for the position. Last year he got off to a very slow start at training camp and never recovered, never given a chance to recover really by the coaching staff. So, yeah, they're being cautiously optimistic. I think they're being cautious with Cyrus Quanjo. And everyone, you'd heard the Aaron Cromer soundbite about Quanjo. You heard what I may have said a few minutes ago from Greg Roman about Quanjo. You know, they want to see him in pads. They're giving him a chance now, but they want to see him in pads moving forward before they commit to see if he is a part of the answer up front. Give us your thoughts. Do you feel better about the offensive line question than maybe you did after last season or heading into the draft after they didn't really make a big free agent move? They got Incognito in, first week of February, but when free agency opened in March, they did not sign any offensive linemen. That was the one thing, and if you put yourself back in that frame of mind in March, the one thing many of our listeners said, where's the offensive lineman? You know, we all know by now that Brian Bulaga was high on their list, and Bulaga elected to stay with the Green Bay Packers. So they didn't really make a big splash offensive line signing. Where are you now with that? When you see it shaping up as Miller on the inside with Wood and Incognito and a combination, two of these three, probably Quanjo, Glenn and Henderson at the tackle spots. Give us a call. We'll get after the top of the hour, get a chance to go back to the phone lines at 803-0550 or from toll-free land at 1-888-550-2550. Hey, one other note I want to pass along. We talked a lot about the NFL's move to Los Angeles on the show a couple of nights ago. Johnny Abundez from Save Our Bolts was on the show, the fan-based group, the Coalition of Fans in San Diego, trying to keep the Chargers there. By all accounts, you know, if you read tea leaves, the league is almost in a hurry to get a team in Los Angeles. This news coming out tonight from NFL.com's Ian Rappaport. The NFL is going to have another league meeting to discuss the Los Angeles situation. Not on the schedule, but they're going to meet in August to discuss the L.A. topic. They will meet in Chicago. It will take place in Chicago. But the agenda item, Los Angeles. No major news expected, no major decisions in August, but they're going to use it as a timeline and kind of an update on the progress for the future of teams like the Oakland Raiders, the Chargers, and the St. Louis Rams. So there's clearly a push on by the league to move the Los Angeles thing forward with construction of the stadium in Carson and the one in Inglewood. And it is really moving forward very quickly now. A previously unscheduled meeting of NFL owners coming up in August. Pretty amazing. All right, we'll take a break. Hopefully you'll join us in the next hour to talk more about the Bills' offensive line picture. What'd you think of that? Going to talk with one of the Bills' all-time great offensive linemen, Al B. Miller, at the bottom of next hour. And we'll check in on new defensive backs coach Tim McDonald next hour as well. An hour to go, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Let's go! Let's go!
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Keep spilling your blood for one another. Let's go get it now. Woo! Let's go. Bills on three. One, two, three. Bills.
Safety. 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 Unbelievable.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
Back for hour two of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. We're here until 9 o'clock. One more hour to go. We've talked a lot about the offensive line and we'd like to continue that discussion this hour. 8:30 tonight, we'll talk with one of the Bills' all-time offensive linemen, Al B. Miller, just named to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame last night, late yesterday. We'll talk with Al B. Miller live at the bottom of this hour at 8:30. Coming up in a moment, we'll switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about the defensive backfield. Now, you know Donnie Henderson returns for his third year as defensive backs coach, but you probably also know that the Bills added another defensive backs coach to go along with him. His name is Tim McDonald, played in the NFL, had a sterling college career at USC, and played in the NFL for 13 years. And with Arizona and San Francisco primarily, he spent the last 2 years on Rex Ryan's New York Jets staff, and now he's with the Buffalo Bills, where he is co-defensive backs coach. Has a lot to say about the Bills' DBs, including the safeties, Aaron Williams and Corey Graham, and the corners, Leotis McKelvin in particular. We're going to talk with Tim McDonald coming up just a few minutes here on the show. We'd like to talk with you about the offensive line, and the phone lines are open if you're up for that. 803-0550, the number. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. I guess what it comes down to is the Buffalo Bills' offensive line better now than it was a year ago. I think it will be. I mean, we don't know. They haven't practiced in pads yet. But I do think it will be better than it was a year ago. They've made a couple of additions. They are a work in progress, clearly, as they continue to shuffle the deck a little bit. But I do think they're going to be better than they were a year ago. Are you down with that? Do you think that's going to be the case? Give us a call. Let us know what you think at 803-0550 or from outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I mean, let's look at where they were a year ago up front on the offensive line. We know their struggles, obviously. And their struggles were well chronicled. Too much pass rush pressure on Kyle Orton. Not a whole lot of time to throw. The running game in particular, which was so strong the year before, and the running game, which I think had a lot to do with how well the offensive line played in 2013, the running game really struggled last year. A lot of that with the offensive line. So who did they have last year? Left to right, Cordy Glenn got all 16 starts at left tackle. Kind of a mixed bag at the left guard spot. They started with Chris Williams for the first three games. Then they went to the rookie Cyril Richardson after Chris Williams got hurt. Richardson got four starts there. And then finally, for the Jets game at midseason, they plugged Craig Urbick in there at left guard, and he went the rest of the way. Right guard, Eric Pierce, got all 16 starts at right guard. And, of course, Eric Wood got all 16 starts at the center spot. So last year, it was Cordy Glenn on the left side, a mixed bag of Chris Williams, Cyril Richardson, and Craig Urbick at left guard, Eric Wood at center. At right guard, you had Eric Pierce, and at right tackle, Chantrell Henderson. How are they lining up this year, you ask? Well, we're in June, first week of June, OTAs. But across the front, left tackle, it could be any one of these three. Cordy Glenn, the incumbent, Chantrell Henderson, the incumbent right tackle, or maybe Cyrus Kwanjo, who sat the bench, was only active for, I believe, one game last year. Any one of those three could be your starting left tackle. This past week, here at One Bills Drive, Chantrell Henderson was the man who got most of the reps in the OTAs at left tackle. You know, there were those who said last year that Henderson might be better suited to the left side than the right side. We talked with him last hour about that. He says he's more comfortable on the right side, but working on the comfort level right now. But, of course, last year, that was the left tackle spot. Last year, that was left tackle. This year, it's going to be, I would think, Glenn Henderson or Kwanjo. Left guard in practice this week, it's been Richie Incognito, the free agent signing from February. Now, Incognito got most of his work, if I'm correct, in Miami on the right side. I don't think it's a dramatic difference there, and he's worked a little bit of both right and left here in these offseason workouts, but it appears that he may have found a home for the Bills at least this week as the left guard. Eric Wood, the mainstay at center. That's not going to change. On the right guard spot, this is the new addition along with Incognito, John Miller, third-round draft pick from Louisville, and then right tackle this past week, it's been Cyrus Kwanjo. Are they better than they were a year ago? From what you can tell from that group. I mean, the center remains the same. There's a chance the left tackle, Cordy Glenn, would remain the same. An upgrade, you would think, at left guard with Incognito? You would think so, right? You would think so from what they went through last year with Craig Urbick, now a solid backup on the team after starting half a season last year. An upgrade at right guard with John Miller over Eric Pierce? I would say yes, just in terms of athleticism. And ability, there'll be a learning curve for John Miller, but in terms of athleticism and an ability to adapt to what's going on around him, I think that's an upgrade. Right tackle, it could be Henderson again, which would be the incumbent. It could be Kwanjo. It remains to be seen whether that's an upgrade. So there are interesting things going on up front for the Buffalo Bills offensive line. It's not always just about quarterbacks for the Buffalo Bills as far as change. And clearly, if you look at it last year, that was one of the big problems they had was offensive line play, and it looks like they have made some significant changes here, changes that were overdue, obviously, and changes that I think many people expected them to make and maybe thought they'd do it with a bigger splash in free agency or with the second-round pick in the draft. They did not in either case. Greg Roman is the Buffalo offensive coordinator who keeps a close eye on things up front on the offensive line. That's where he got his start in NFL coaching. Greg Roman met the media today and talked a little bit about what's going on the offensive side of the ball.
Guys are working hard, and we're throwing a lot at them. Today we worked on a lot of things we may or may not use during the course of the season, but we still feel it's important enough that it may come up at some point. So I thought the guys did a great job of taking in a tremendous amount of information in a short amount of time and going out and making chicken salad out of it. Okay.
With some of that experimentation that you're talking about, maybe assess where you are in your process with your offensive staff. Have you compartmentalized all of the talent that you have at your disposal and where you think those pieces may help you most?
I think that's going to be a process. I don't think we fully understand that. I think it'll evolve during the course of the season as well. I think we definitely have a really strong idea, but there's things like depth and contingency plans that you've always got to consider. So that's why creating, developing players, the young players, guys we're not sure about, making sure this time of year we give them every opportunity to blossom, to create functional depth. And in the first year, you're trying to get everybody on the same page. So you got a couple different balls in the air at the same time.
As a coordinator, though, you obviously have in your mind's eye what you think a lot of these guys can do well. How do you keep yourself from getting too excited before you see whether or not they really can make it happen on the field and execute it in the way you think they can?
I think you got to always keep things in perspective when you're making decisions. and, you know, take it one step at a time. Keep your eye on the ball. You can't get ahead of yourself in this league. It's too competitive. So it's really every day you got to come in, and it's a new day. So while you're making plans, you got to be prepared to adjust.
Wait, how do you go about the process of offensive line evaluation in a non-contact setting?
Oh, I tell you what, you can make a lot more hay than you think, because first and foremost, guys have to know what to do. And we can, I think we've been doing this long enough that we can kind of project how that's going to look when guys get in pads. So we get a tremendous amount of evaluation done this time of year with the offensive line. Really every position, but you can tell. You can really tell. And certainly the pads are the final test. I know that. We know that. You know that. But you can definitely kind of put a guy where you think he's going to be, and most of the time you'll probably be right.
That's Greg Roman, the Bills offensive coordinator, talking about evaluating linemen. He says, yeah, you can do it, even though they're not in pads. Call here from Rob in Maryland. Rob, on the offensive line, what do you think?
Hey, John. You asked a question about whether or not we thought that this year's offensive line was better or worse than last year's offensive line at this time. I would probably say that this year's offensive line is probably about equal, and that's only because Cordy Glenn at that time was, at least in my book, he was a pretty good offensive lineman. But this year, he kind of regressed last year. But this year, I think with the addition of Incognito, I think that was a good pickup. I don't think we're right, I guess, necessarily better than last year. I think there's more potential this year to be better than last year, but I think it's just about equal right now.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling, I think they're more talented now on the offensive line than they were a year ago, with the addition of Incognito, who did go to a Pro Bowl with the Miami Dolphins, with the influx of youth in the person of John Miller. And I guess I'm hoping more than knowing that Quanjo would be an upgrade. I mean, as I said, Quanjo's the guy to watch here in the next couple of weeks, the weeks remaining before you get to training camp, because if he continues to work with that first team, to me, that will be a sign that, yeah, they think he just might have it. And if he might have it, then that could really be a major upgrade in what they're doing up front on the offensive line.
And now, Subway Fresh Takes. Subway, eat fresh.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. So week two of organized team activity is over for the Buffalo Bills. One more week to go, and then the mandatory mini camp, and then they're off for a little while. Joining us in studio is the new defensive backs assistant coach for the Buffalo Bills, Tim McDonald. Coach, thanks very much for coming by.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You've settled in here, I guess. Got here around, what, first week of February or so?
I was here. We settled in the first week of February, but okay. We got here on the 15th of January.
How's it gone so far? What do you think?
It's going great. Loving it. Yeah. Got a nice group of guys to work with. I'm excited. I'm working with Donnie. It's been a good experience so far.
Has to be a comfort level having spent the last couple of years with the Jets, with this coaching staff, mostly on the defensive side, too.
Yes. There's a lot of carryover. We're running our defense, and it's been enlightening for me to see these guys with their eyes wide open and learning something new. It's been pretty awesome.
Coach, tell me how you got on this coaching path. I know you had an outstanding career in college and one of the most decorated players in USC history. Did you always think back then that you wanted to be a coach at this level?
Yeah. Really? Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, it was about to happen right after I retired, after 13 years in the league.
Right.
I retired and was going to stay in San Francisco. But I needed to get to know my kids a little bit. You know, I got two boys and a girl, and, spent a lot of time away from them growing up because I was away playing football, and, they were busy being little kids.
Yeah.
And I coached them. They wanted to play football, and I thought, what better way to end his career by spending more time with my kids. That's what I wanted to do, and got a chance to spend a lot of time with them, coach them. Growing up, I got a chance to coach them through high school, and when they left high school, I went to college, coached college, and then I came here.
Where were you in college again?
At Fresno State.
Okay. Tell me about that experience. What'd you learn
there? It was great. I had a great secondary there. I had a couple safeties that, the two safeties, I think we led the nation that year in interceptions. Had number two in the nation, two or three in the nation in total defense. Those guys played really well. One of the safeties got drafted by the Washington Redskins. The other one got drafted this year. He was just a young buck. Got drafted this year, De'Ron Smith. So okay. we had a couple guys that played really well for us.
Knowing what you knew about the coaching life, it was probably a good idea to be around your kids, because once you get into this, the hours are worse than player hours, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I knew that. That's why I made a conscious effort to spend that time before I went to the college level with my kids.
Tell me about coming to the NFL. How did that happen, and who made that come together for you?
Well, you know, I had some opportunities that I kind of let pass up, as I still had a son in college, and my oldest son, you know, he's the safety for the Rams now. He plays for the Rams, and once he got out of the way and it was okay for dad to take that next step, I got in contact with my contacts, and there was an opportunity with DT, who was my first NFL coach.
Okay.
Actually, with when I was drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals, we moved to Phoenix, Arizona, became the Phoenix Cardinals, and DT was my secondary coach. And we've always kept in contact. We've always talked about getting together and doing it again, and I called him. They were in some transition over there, and there was an opportunity there to go in there and coach that secondary, leave college ball and coach the secondary, and I left and came over to the Jets.
That was a couple of years ago, right, when Petten left? And
when Petten came to Buffalo,
right.
I came to New York.
Right, to be part of
there was a shakeup
right.
over there in New York, and
right.
I was able to step in.
You know, they right before you got there, the Jets had obviously Revis and several other great players in the backfield, and there was kind of a talent drain there, right? You lose Revis,
well,
you lose a great player right off the bat.
To be quite honest, I had a pretty good thing going at Fresno State, and I thought, you know, hey, look, there'd be nothing better than to go coach Darrell Revis and Cromartie,
yeah.
right? So I get here, you know, I get Cromartie for a year, but Darrell ended up going through, you know, part of OTAs, and we didn't get anything done with him, and he ended up leaving.
Yeah. So you didn't get what you...
So I thought I was coming for the two guys, but Cromartie was good for us the 2 years that I had him, or the year that I had him. And, you know, the best thing that happened with the Revis, we were able to do a lot of teach tape off of that guy, because that guy's a walking, you know, when it comes to technique and how to play that cornerback position, Darrell Revis does it just about as good as anyone. Not the fastest,
right.
not the biggest, not the strongest, but he's definitely understands technique.
You know, it's funny. I can't remember which one of our Bills corners I was talking to a couple of months ago. He said essentially the same thing. You know, there's mm-hmm. great corners out there. Sherman's great out mm-hmm. in Seattle, and some guys are better athletes than they are players. But
right.
he said Revis is the whole package.
He's
right?
a technician.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he understands situation football. He understands, you know, splits by wide receivers. He understands what the offense is trying to do to you. You know, the guys that play the best out there understands offense.
Yeah.
And he was one of those guys that really understood what the offense was trying to do to him.
Your experience of going to the Jets, expecting to coach Revis and then not getting him, I have a friend who used to work here, Alex Van Pelt, quarterback coach of the Packers. Mm-hmm. And we talk once in a while, and he says, we've got Aaron Rodgers. I'm not going anywhere. I mean,
right.
it's always intrigued me how, coach, you're ambitious. You want to move ahead. You think you can
right.
make players into
right.
good players. But if you get a great player, a Revis or an Aaron Rodgers, you kind of
right.
stay around them, right?
Well, you stay around them, and you know what? If you can help those guys in any kind of way. But the good thing about those guys is they become teaching tapes for the younger guys. You know, last year was a real struggle for us in New York. I mean, we had guys that were – that were in our starting lineup that we didn't expect to be on a team in training camp.
Yeah.
And that's a tough deal. That's a difficult task there. You always want to teach guys and make guys better and do your part to make those guys better. But when, you know, this is the pros, and you want to coach some guys that have the talent.
We're with Tim McDonald, the Bills' assistant defensive backs coach, works with Donnie Henderson with the defensive backs. I was talking to one of these Bills players a couple of weeks ago. It was Corey Graham a week ago. Talked about how cornerback in this defense, the one you had at the Jets, the one that's coming in here to Buffalo, it's virtually all man coverage for those corners, right?
We're a man team outside. You know, we'll do some things and mix up some pressures and drop some different guys in our zone pressure scheme. But those guys outside, now, you got to be able to play some technique, got to be able to understand situations, and you know, for the most part, hey, they know we're going to be in man coverage.
Yeah. What characteristics do you look for then in those outside corners when you know that you got to play that way?
Guy can get up and press. Guy that can get up and press and understands his ability and can take away the deep ball.
Because press allows you to, what, reroute receivers, disrupt timing, well, all of that?
Know, press allows us to do a lot of things away from the press side. So if you can shut down, you always hear about these shut down corners. Those guys can control vertical throws on their side of the field. If we got a guy that can do that, it makes playing football a whole lot easier. There's a lot of other things you can do and get pressure on that quarterback and do some things. And because a lot of times we'll make his only outlet to that guy. And if you can beat that guy, then you can win. Well, if you have, you know, a Gilmore over there, you know, or a McKelvin that was playing the way he was playing last year before he got hurt, you have those guys sitting over there, it's going to be tough on a quarterback.
Well, that leads right into my next question. The corners you've inherited here, Stephon Gilmore, Leotis McKelvin, the outside guys, mm-hmm. are they suited to what you want to do?
Oh, definitely. Gilmore is just, you know, when you look up cornerback in the dictionary, you hope you see a guy that's got the physical traits that a Gilmore has. You know,
size, mostly.
Size, yes. Now, I haven't seen other than what I've saw on tape, but he seems to be a pretty bright kid. McKelvin's played great, was playing great football last year before he got hurt. Corey Graham stepped in. He can swing. He can play any one of those positions back there, which also help you. And, you know, this one of the most important positions now that kind of goes unnoticed is that fifth defensive back spot, that nickelback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we got one of the better ones in the league right now with Nickell Robey.
Yeah.
I mean, he does a hell of a job in there. He's smart, he's bright, he's sharp, and he plays much bigger than his size.
I want to take you through some of these guys because I've watched them develop, mm-hmm. especially since Donnie Henderson's been here the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And Leotis McKelvin in particular, you know, coming out of a small college, struggled at first. Fans got on him. You know, people start talking about a first-round bust. Mm-hmm. It was not until Donnie Henderson got here and did something with him. I think it had to do with playing the ball, being aware of the ball, that mm-hmm. Leotis, I think, blossomed into a pretty good, actually better than average NFL corner.
Right. I mean, what I saw last year on tape was Leotis played pretty well. You know, if it was not for that injury, I think Leotis is across the water. He's going to Hawaii because he was on a tear early in the year. And I think that's big with all these guys. You know, the ability to not just be satisfied with knocking the ball down, the ability to go get the ball. That's the difference on defense. You can turn over, you're winning ball games.
How is the transition going for Corey Graham? The last couple of weeks, he spent, I think, virtually all of his time at the safety spot. Huh?
Right. Well, there's a lot of learning there. There's a lot of teaching there. And we know he can play corner. We know what our cornerbacks are going to do. They're going to line up, play press man, and go get your guy. Okay. And at safety, you got to direct back there. You got to be the quarterback. You got to know where everybody needs to be lined up. You got to make the calls. You got to make the checks. You got to make the adjustments. And Corey's capable of doing that. But in order to do that, you got to get reps at it. And we're just trying to make sure he gets caught up so there's a smooth transition in the training camp.
Aaron Williams made a similar transition a couple of years ago. And he talked a lot about how it's just a totally different picture you get. When you're corner, you're watching one guy. Your focus is here. When you're safety, it's like a wide shot of the whole field. Huh?
And you have to be a good field guy. I mean, there's a lot of situations where you got to feel things without seeing them. So, you know, you got to feel this, but know what's happening inside. You got to be able to communicate with everybody. And if you're going to communicate with everybody as a safety, you can't just get locked into a guy. You got to communicate with a linebacker. There may be a time or two you're communicating with defensive linemen.
Mm.
So you got to see the whole picture. And that's the thing. You got to have big picture vision.
You have not, I don't think, had a chance to see much of Aaron Williams on the field during this offseason. But mm-hmm. what do you think of him from outside coming in and watching the video?
Right. Well, I watched him all last year because we played him a couple times, you know, last couple of years. And Aaron's a guy with a lot of talent. He runs around. He hits people. He flies around the football. He makes plays. And I think he's just tapping into, you know, how good he can be. You know, the sky's the limit for that kid. And if he continues to progress, he's got a chance to be special.
He is a hitter. In fact, he plays the role kind of a hitter, sometimes a little bit too reckless. Banged up some of his own teammates from time to time.
And those are the things, especially coming from a guy that played the position. If he just understands how to read his keys and see that big picture, I think, you know, Aaron will be able to narrow his vision down a little bit. You know, we say you got to see the big picture. But if you see too much, you're going to see a little.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we always preach. So narrow down, understand what you're keying, what you're reading, and I think you'll see Aaron start to take off.
A year ago, Corey Graham came in, free agent from Baltimore, special teamer, but also I think he was viewed by many as the eventual nickel corner, the slot corner. And Nickell Robey just did not let that happen last year. You mentioned Nickell a moment ago. What do you like about him?
Well, Nickell is extremely bright, and he's got a great feel for the game. I mean, that's just a guy, you know, when you talk about, if you can compare it to a golfer with a great short game, that's all feel. And when you're in that slot, what he's really playing, he's playing like a linebacker. He's a linebacker that's walked out.
He's a 5'7" linebacker,
exactly,
right?
Because we put him on the field, we take out a linebacker. So he's got to be able to play all those roles. And you got to be a smart guy to do it because you're inside and you got more field to work with. You know, a corner, yeah, you may be outside and you only got, you know, one side of the field you got to worry about. This guy's inside. He's got to worry about the whole field, and he's got to worry about the run game. And Nikhil does it about as good as any in the league.
I'm just looking up his size. I think he's listed as 5'9". Do you think he's really 5'9"? I don't know if he is.
He's 5'9".
All right, we'll call him 5'9".
We'll call him 5'9".
Last guy I want to ask you about is the first draft pick, Ron Darby. Mm-hmm. First of all, what have you seen from him a couple of weeks in, and what do you project from him with all this talent we've talked about? How's he going to get on the field?
Well, first thing, you got to understand, I mean, you can't have too many corners. And I know that from firsthand experience. I mean, we had a couple guys last year, our top three corners go down in training camp. What do you do? We don't have any one of those guys at the start of the season. So you can't have too many corners because it's hard to play this defense if you don't have guys that can run with these little fast guys. When these offenses start putting these three and four wide receivers on the field, you got to have cornerbacks out there on the field, guys that can run with them. The guy can run. I mean, we knew what we were getting. He's a world-class sprinter. He can run, and now it just boils down to his technique, how quickly he can get his technique fixed and understand how to play the ball. And those things is how quickly we're going to be able to get him on the field. You know, last year you had Leotis go down. Yeah. You know, you had Gilmore went down. That just happens at that position. Those guys are, you know, they're really like quarter horses. You know, They run fast, but they don't run long. So we got to make sure that we always, you know, can give those guys a break and get other guys out there. So you can't have too many corners.
Coach, we appreciate this. Thanks for coming in here today to talk about it. Tim McDonald is the Bills assistant defensive backs coach in studio with us. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh.
Hotline open to one of the all-time Buffalo Bills greats. Just yesterday, the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame introduced its class of 2015, 12 new members going in this fall in the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, and one of them is one of the Bills' very own, a standout for the Bills on the offensive line for 9 seasons, played on the great AFL championship teams here in Buffalo. Happy to welcome Al B. Miller to the show, and happy, Al, to say congratulations. What a great honor for you to be a Buffalo Hall of Famer.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor for me.
I feel like it's a long time coming. You retired 45 years ago from the Bills. How did this not happen before, Al?
Well, I don't know. There's always, you know, the time is just the center, and they don't get the publicity, so.
Well, I mean, you had a great career with the Bills, and you had a great college career, too, and you grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania. How did you find your way to go up to snowy Syracuse to play your college football at?
Well, I was, when I got out of high school, and my marks weren't that good. So I went to, I ended up going to a prep school, a school called Perky Yeoman Prep in Pennsylvania. While I was there, I had my athletics were quite well. I ended up being a wrestling champion and everything else. So Syracuse then wanted me. And the football coach, he didn't have any more scholarships left. So they went to the wrestling coach and got a scholarship through the wrestling. So that's how I got into Syracuse.
Wow. Now, the football coach was the legendary Ben Schwartzwalder. I've heard you and Dick Beyer and several other veterans talk about Coach Schwartzwalder at Syracuse. What was he to you, and what did he mean to you when you played there, Al?
Well, he was, you know, we had all kinds of coaches. He wasn't my direct coach, so, but he was, you know, he had a good reputation, and he was liked by some players, and some other players he wasn't.
I'm tempted to ask you which side you were on, but I have a feeling I know.
Yeah, no, don't ask, please.
That's amazing. I mean, you had success there, obviously. You won a national championship,
yep,
with that Syracuse group in 1959. That had to be a tremendous thrill to win a national title.
Yeah, that was great. It was something that, will live with me forever. All the football I ever played, that's one of the big highlights.
You played with the great Ernie Davis. What was that like? What kind of a guy was he? What kind of a player was he?
Ernie was, first of all, he was a great, great individual, personally great individual. Football player, just as great or greater. He was great football player, and he was I was proud to be part of his program.
You know, in that era, and it was documented in that movie, the Express movie about Ernie Davis, racial issues were prominent then, and you and your Syracuse team actually ran into some of that at the Cotton Bowl, right, against Texas, University of Texas.
Yes, we did. We ran into it down in Texas, and we were invited to go somewhere at a party or something like that, and they refused to let the colored boys go, so we all refused to go.
Wow. That was a big statement back then, back in the late 50s.
Then.
We're with Al B. Miller. He's going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame after his distinguished career here in Buffalo. Drafted coming out of Syracuse by the St. Louis Cardinals of the NFL and the Buffalo Bills of the AFL. Tell me what that experience was like and why Buffalo and not St. Louis for you, Al.
Well, that was a tough decision, and I could have made almost twice the amount of money, but we just thought it over and wanted to be closer to home, so that's why we came here.
At the time, the NFL was what, just 1 year up and running. Was there that much difference in the level of play between NFL and AFL back then, 1961, I believe it was?
Oh, I'm sure there was a difference, absolutely. I mean, it didn't take us long to catch up, but we weren't the NFL then.
Yeah. Did you think you could start right away? And in fact, did the Bills tell you would start right away when you signed up here in 61?
No, I don't think so. We just that was just a shot in the arm, I guess. We gave it a try, and thank God things worked out.
Folks obviously remember a lot about Lou Saban, but we don't hear much about Buster Ramsey, the Bills' first-ever head coach. He was here in 61 when you got here. What kind of a coach was he? What kind of a relationship did you have with him, Al?
Oh, Buster was great. We loved him. We all liked him. He was like one of us, and he was very strong on you. He was very strict, even. He was all this and that, but I think 99% of us really liked him.
And what about Saban when he came in? He was, it seems to me, just from the outside looking in, he might have been a little bit more businesslike than Buster Ramsey, huh?
Well, he may have been that too, but we still, I mean, speaking for myself again, I enjoyed him and I appreciated him. And anytime you make a professional football team, if the guys... if head coach is a devil, you still like him.
Yeah, you have to, right?
If you make it, right.
What a great team you played on. And I was looking over, you look at the lineup then. You played next to Billy Shaw for virtually your entire career, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Tell me about Billy Shaw playing next to him, what kind of a player he was, what kind of a man he was.
Well, we always, in the center, myself, I was always the one that called the blocking techniques, which we were supposed to use on the line. And, thank God I had a guy like Billy Shaw. When I had a guy in front of me or something like this, I'd always call him over to help.
Yeah.
So he worked out very well.
Yeah, smart. I was also looking back at the lineups, and I never knew this until today when I was looking at this, Al. Tom Day, Tippy Day, he played offensive guard back then, his first couple of years here?
Well, yeah. Yes, he did. He was, I don't know when the hell he played in college, but he did go to guard, yes.
Huh. What you guys went up in practice, you went up against really some great players, right? Dunaway and Sestak and guys like that. How much did that help you in your AFL career to go up against that great defensive line every day in practice?
Well, I said before, that was great because these boys were, they were all professionally bounded, and they were good football players because, we were national champions, and we had a hell of a football team.
Yeah.
We got our work cut out for us.
Yeah. Al, when people think about the 1964 and 65 AFL champion Buffalo Bills, they immediately start talking about the defense with that great D-line I talked about with guys like Mike Stratton and Harry mm-hmm. Jacobs. Mm-hmm. Is the offense from those championship teams, are the offensive players a bit overlooked in your opinion?
I think so, but that's, yes, it's always that way, but it's one goes before the other. But I was part of the team, and that's what I was proud of mostly.
Yeah. What's your favorite memory of those of the two championship games? San Diego both times, one at home, one on the road. Did you enjoy one more than the other?
No, and when you get that high up in the air like that, you enjoy every one of them.
Yeah. You shut out the Chargers, I think, right, in the game out in San Diego.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that had to be a highlight. And you kept on playing out, and you played right through the 1970s, or through 1970 season anyway, and you watched that AFL championship team kind of disintegrate a little bit, and people got away. That had to be difficult to end your career on that note.
Well, it did, but, you know, I was later, after that, I was picked up to go to Cleveland.
Okay.
But at the time, I got into the nightclub business out here in Hamburg,
uh-huh.
And that was going great. I mean, it was just absolutely fabulous business that we had there for years, and so I didn't want to leave, and my wife would have to take care of it, control of it, and it was just too much for her.
And
you to do that.
Growing up in Pennsylvania, and then you moved here to play with the Bills, 9 years with the Bills, and you're still here some, you know, 40, almost more than 50 years after you arrived here. What was it about Buffalo and Western New York that kept you in this area, Al?
Well, the one main thing was, you know, the great people that are here. I met up with some great people. And another thing is, we didn't make enough to move.
Yeah. Well, you won AFL championships with the Bills. You were on the AFL All-Star team 1965. Obviously, a starting lineup with the Bills for all 9 years you were here. Where does this rank going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame and everything that you've accomplished, Al?
Well, I don't care if it's the top or the bottom. I'm in there, and it's great, great, great thing that I never thought would happen. And I want to thank you and whoever else is responsible because it's a great thing for me.
You got the family all over Western New York. I'm sure they're real excited about this too, huh?
Oh yeah, we got. And then I got some you know, grandchildren now, grandboys that are playing college football. So I hope they come along.
That'll be great. We look forward to it this fall. Al, congratulations again. Thanks for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it. We'll see you this fall when you are enshrined in the Hall of Fame. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Al B. Miller, he is one of the all-time great Buffalo Bills, and he's going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame this fall. The date will be announced sometime later this month. They usually wait until Sabres' schedule comes out. Al B. Miller in a distinguished class of 12 going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame this year. Others include George Daddario and Mike Rappel from Canisius, NBA star Keith Robinson, John Tavares of the Buffalo Bandits. Al B. Miller, the Bills' own. Going in the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Congratulations to him. Al joined us by the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We'll be back to wrap things up. Got time for phone calls. If you still got them, give us a call, 803-0550, or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO tonight, live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Let's see if we can squeeze in a couple of phone calls. Dale is calling. Dale, welcome. You're on the air. What's up? Hi, Dale. Go ahead.
Mr. B. Miller. I knew Mr. B. Miller as a substitute teacher all through high school. I couldn't be happier for him. I got to say, all my peers, we absolutely adored him. He was a quirky old man. And to be able to pick his brain to get better at football for our high school team was absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
Couldn't be happier for the
man. Yeah, that's great, Dale. Thanks for calling. He is plain spoken. I'm sure he's a great teacher, a very good coach, very good wrestling coach, as a matter of fact, and knows a lot about football as well. A call here from John. John, hello. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph. Great interview with B. Miller. Here's a good question, because you're as old as I am. How do you think that team, if they had beat Kansas City, would have stacked up against Green Bay?
Oof.
I think they would have done better. I think the defense was better. They could have shut Starr down, and I think we might have had some offense there.
Yeah, it's a great question. We'll never know, obviously. It's funny. What was I watching? The Vince Lombardi feature on NFL Network recently, and they dealt – I mean, they destroyed Kansas City in the Super Bowl. I think the Bills Bills, because of their defense, I think would have put up a better fight than the Chiefs did. I don't know that the Bills would have beaten Green Bay that year because Green Bay was just solid and obviously very well coached. But I would think they'd put up a much better fight than the Chiefs did in that first Super Bowl. The second Super Bowl, I thought the Raiders acquitted themselves pretty well, but obviously they didn't win that game either. But I think they would have done better. I think still at that point, and it pains me to say it because I grew up with the AFL here in Buffalo, I think the NFL's best were ahead of the AFL's best back then. And it obviously the Jets broke through big in Super Bowl III, and then the Chiefs came back, and things, I think by, 1970, 71, things had evened out. But even back then, 66, 67, I think the NFL had a leg up on the best that the AFL had to offer. That's it.
And now, what have we learned from tonight's show?
Well, we take a few minutes here to look back at the show tonight. Again, Al B. Miller, a highlight, I know, for many of us to hear his voice and to congratulate him on going into the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Talk to a current offensive lineman back in the 7 o'clock hour, Chantrell Henderson. Last year, starting right tackle, lost 16 games. Played right tackle at the University of Miami. He's been working at left tackle in these recent OTA sessions here for the Bills, and we asked him how he likes that.
I'm trying to get it down pat, man. Usually a little more comfortable on the right, but it's good to be versatile. So I'm just getting my technique down pat as far as becoming back comfortable at left tackle.
What is it about the right side that makes you feel more comfortable?
I think just the fact that that's what I played, all the way through college and all the way up until now. And I did play a little bit of left tackle last preseason, so that was a little different for me too. But I like both sides, so it's fine with me.
Chantrell Henderson, who working at left tackle this week. What did we learn from Tim McDonald, one of the co-defensive backs coach for the Buffalo Bills, who was in studio with us tonight? He confirmed what Corey Graham said last week. This team is a strict man coverage team on the outside at the corners. And we asked him what playing man-to-man allows this Buffalo defense to do.
Press allows us to do a lot of things away from the press side. So if you can shut down, you always hear about these shut-down corners. Those guys can control vertical throws on their side of the field. If we got a guy that can do that, it makes playing football a whole lot easier. There's a lot of other things you can do and get pressure on that quarterback and do some things. And because a lot of times we'll make his only outlet to that guy. And if you can beat that guy, then you can win. Well, if you have, a Gilmore over there, or a McKelvin that was playing the way he was playing last year before he got hurt, you have those guys sitting over there, it's going to be tough on a quarterback.
Tim McDonald, who is the co-defensive backs coach for the Bills, along with Donnie Henderson, talking about how tough the Bills expect to be defensively. So let's see. We'll see how it plays out. No practice tomorrow for the Bills. The OTAs resume on Monday. But we're here tomorrow with a two-hour show starting at 7 o'clock. And among our guests tomorrow night, Paul Feinbaum. Do you know him from SEC, ESPN, SEC Network? He'll be joining us to talk about the SEC players on the Buffalo Bills roster and in the NFL. And Bills all-time great punter Brian Moorman joins us tomorrow night as well. He's going into the State of Kansas Athletic Hall of Fame. We'll talk with Brian Moorman about that, plus a lot more of the latest here from One Bills Drive and around the NFL. Tomorrow night when we're on the air from 7 o'clock until 9. That'll do it for us tonight, though. Our engineer is T.J. Luckman. Our producer is Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO. Family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Like NOCO on Facebook.com/NOCO for great deals, specials, and more. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7 with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.